Before we start this episode, I just want to take a moment to say thank you. Thank you for listening, thank you for participating, and thank you for working towards justice and answers for Jennifer. This past week, this podcast passed 1 million downloads, and we know this is not because of us. It's because of you. Thank you for proving that there is good in all of us. And thank you for honoring a person that most of you, like me, have never met. I also must say before we start this episode that at the end of the last sidebar, we played a clip of an interview that was supposed to be a part of this episode. However, since that sidebar aired, that individual has asked for us to pull the interview due to a conflict of interest. So, long story short, we ultimately decided to not include that interview today. That out of the way, let's get started.
...24-year-old Jennifer Kesey disappeared January 24th, 2006. She was last seen at her condo on Conroy Road.
We're going to solve a missing persons case, which has haunted Orlando investigators.
So we're still waiting for that one person to come through with the one bit of information that could bring Jennifer home.
This is Unconcluded, a real-time investigative podcast looking into the 2006 disappearance of Jennifer Kesey in Orlando, Florida. I'm Sean Gerd. Since we started this show, we have been so thankful to those of you out there listening right now who have been part of this project, those of you devoting your own time and investing yourselves into the investigation. Today, we wanted to cover a topic of discussion that is among the most mentioned in the emails and messages we get from you. We're often asked if we've looked into similar cases or known individuals who have committed similar crimes in the Central Florida area that could possibly be linked to Jennifer's disappearance. And for those of you who have followed this case over the years, you're aware that this was a topic that was at the forefront of the Jennifer Kesey investigation at one point in time. That time was back in 2009. It was then that another Orlando, Florida woman had disappeared.
Tracy Ocasio was last seen in this surveillance video leaving the Taproom Bar in Metro West. She hasn't been seen since.
But it wasn't just that another woman had disappeared. The similarities to Jennifer Kesey's case became impossible to ignore. It's been some 8 years since then. The possible connections and suspicion have obviously cooled. But we've said all along, our plan is to look at the past to help guide the future. So today, we're going to take a look at a man that at one point seemed to be a viable suspect in Jennifer's disappearance and came to be named the prime suspect in Tracy Ocasio's disappearance.
Joe's going to come up here and explain what that search is going to
Today, Ocoee Police investigators officially named James Hadaway as the prime suspect in the disappearance of Tracy Ocasio.
He was the last person with her. We know he drove home with her. We know we interviewed him. We know he lied about what he was doing with him.
A year ago, the 27-year-old Ocoee woman vanished just after midnight on May 27th after watching an Orlando Magic game at a Metro West bar. She was seen leaving with Hadaway.
Hadaway is the one who doesn't have an alibi. He's the one who gave us a false alibi. He's the one that, yes, he drove her home. And he's just where everything's pointing right now.
Until today, Hadaway was only regarded as a person of interest in the case. He sits in the Seminole County Jail on charges in an unrelated attempted murder case. Detectives have not pushed forward yet for prosecution. They say as long as Hadaway is in jail, they can work their case.
We know where he is. He's not going to run. We're not going to lose him. And now we can use this time to try to find more evidence. We can use this time to really find Tracy.
As you just heard, Tuesday, May 26, 2009, Tracy Ocasio was last seen leaving the Florida Taproom and Bar with James Hadaway. It's easy to see how immediate connections between this case and Jennifer Kesey's disappearance were made. A young, pretty woman having vanished from Orlando is likely all that would have been needed to stir interest between the two cases. But there was more. Jennifer Kesey had actually lived at Metro West, the location of the Florida Taproom and Bar, which was the last place Tracy Ocasio was seen leaving with James Hadaway. There also was the fact that, just like Tracy, Jennifer's car had been abandoned after her abduction. And Jennifer's keys, cell phone, wallet, all of those things were missing too. And this was just among a pile of coincidences that couldn't be ignored. There is also a belief by some that the person of interest in Jennifer's disappearance, that person who was captured walking by the pool at the Huntington on the Green, actually looks like it could be James Hathaway. So is it actually possible that this person could be responsible for Jennifer's disappearance? Or was this just desperate attempts to make coincidences into evidence? That's a question that still hasn't been answered, even to this day. So is making a connection from Hathaway to Jennifer even possible, when there wasn't even enough evidence to charge him in the disappearance of Tracy Ocasio, a case in which he'd been named the prime suspect? He'd even been seen on video leaving with her the night of her disappearance. Ocoee Police Chief Steve McCosker at one point said, quote, "He had left the bar with Tracy on the night of her disappearance. Her car was found just blocks from his home. He admitted she came to his house, but says she left on her own. That's the most I can say." So he's the prime suspect in her disappearance, but the police don't have enough evidence to bring charges against him, which goes to show that not only can he make people disappear, but he can do so without leaving any evidence. But let's go ahead and consider if James Hathaway could be the person responsible for Jennifer Kesey's disappearance. And let's start with who he is.
Rachel Clark played the role of James Hathaway, showing the jury how the man accused of trying to kill her treated her when she pulled away during a goodnight hug.
Like this, and kind of like grabbing right here and trying to push my neck off to the side.
Hathaway and Clark knew each other. They were at an after-hours party in August 2008, and he was asked to leave. These pictures show Clark during her trip to the hospital. She says Hathaway flipped out after she gave him a lift home.
Somebody grabbed the back of my head and started slamming my head on the sidewalk, and I was putting my hands in front of my face. Two fingers in my mouth on the side of my jaw while I was laying face first onto the ground and tried to start pulling my head off to the side.
And what, if anything, was Mr. Hathaway saying to you at that time?
Saying, actually, don't make me kill you.
Rachel Clark was a victim. We will not deny that fact.
So let's start there. The attempted murder of a woman named Rachel Clark in Seminole County back in 2008. This is a charge that James Hathaway was convicted of, in which he's currently serving a life sentence for attempted murder, false imprisonment, and burglary with an assault and robbery. But the trial itself would include more information that speaks to the character of James Hathaway. Testimony during this trial included a man discussing how Hathaway often talked about an infatuation for choking women and breaking necks.
The new witness in the upcoming trial for James Hathaway claims Hathaway becomes sexually charged by choking women. Hathaway is a person of interest in the disappearances of Tracy Ocasio and Chris George. West 2's Greg Fox live at the Seminole County Jail right now. And Greg, Hathaway is about to go on trial there in a different case.
Exactly, and he's got a hearing on that coming up tomorrow. Jury selection in that case should begin in less than 2 weeks. And this case involves the attempted murder of a woman who claims that Hathaway is her attacker. And at issue in the document that we're about to show you is that one witness, a new witness, is claiming that there is a pattern of abusive behavior by Hathaway toward women. Francisco Arellano claims he lived with a defendant prior to the date of the crime. Hathaway would discuss with Arellano certain acts that would turn him on sexually, including choking women. Also, Hathaway told Arellano he would disappear if he ever crossed him and that he made others disappear in the past.
These statements clearly illustrate just what he's capable of. Also, you heard in that clip, in February of 2009, and a Apopka man by the name of Chris George also disappeared, and he was last seen with Hadaway and another man. A 2011 Orlando Sentinel article reported that Hadaway was found coming out of the woods on Ocoee Apopka Road near Lake Carter on the day after George disappeared, the same lake where his bones would be found in the muck. Hadaway was never charged in this case, but you can begin to see the pattern. So if we want to ask the question, is this man capable of being the person who took Jennifer? Well, that's an easy one to answer. The harder question is the link between Hadaway and Jennifer Kesey that would make him a possible suspect in her case. And that question isn't nearly as easy to answer. Let's take a look at the possible connections, one by one. The most obvious is that Tracy Ocasio was last seen at the Florida Tap Room at Metro West, and the connection here is easy. Jennifer Kesey had lived at Metro West prior to moving into the Mosaic at Millenia, and in fact, had visited the Tap Room on occasion. So is it possible that Jennifer could have crossed paths with Hadaway at the Tap Room? Absolutely. Is it likely? We're not so sure. We have to consider that Jennifer was no longer living at Metro West at the time of her disappearance, so that in itself would probably make it less likely. I also asked Jennifer's roommate who lived with her at Metro West about the Tap Room specifically. And she said, I quote, "We went to the Tap Room a few times, to my knowledge, but not frequently, and at least not when I lived with her. And I really don't remember much about it." So while we certainly can confirm that Jennifer did in fact frequent this particular location, I don't think we could say that she was a regular. Also on the topic of the location, the nearby gym at Metro West that was next to the Tap Room has been brought up over the years. It's a place that Hadaway was known to frequent, and that Jennifer may have worked out when she lived there. But Jennifer's father's mentioned that she wasn't big into the gym. So this also seems less likely. There's no actual proof of Jennifer and Hadaway ever having crossed paths, other than the assumptions made based on a location. Now what about the abandoned car? Tracy Ocasio and Jennifer Kesey both disappeared and had their car discovered, abandoned, just days later. But that's basically where the similarity ends. Tracy's car was found in Ocoee, near the home of the suspect in her case. And as you know, Jennifer's was found in a bad part of town, just a couple miles from where she lived. We have to imagine that abandoned cars are a frequent occurrence in missing person cases, and I'm not sure we can make any connection between the two. And we can probably say the same thing about the phone and the personal items that have never been found. That's just going to be something common in missing person investigations. Those personal items that the victims are known to have on their person are likely going to be missing too. So what about the similarities between the person of interest from the Huntington on the Green and James Hadaway? Myself, I'm just not seeing it. If I sit down and try to convince myself that it could be him in the video, I could do it, I'm sure. But at first blush, there just isn't enough of a resemblance for me to consider it worth much. I can't rule it out, but it's certainly not something that we can consider a compelling connection. Over the first few months of this investigation, this topic's come up often between Scott and myself. And after taking the last couple weeks to look a little deeper, I'm not sure that our thoughts have changed much since our initial conversations back in April.
Because of, Tracy Ocasio and the whole Ocoee connection. I read that on a few different websites. And I don't know. It seems like maybe people are trying to put a square into a round hole or something like that. You know, it just seems like maybe it's a convenient thing. I plan on looking more into it, though, because you know, obviously it's something to look at. It happened in that area, and obviously Tracy Ocasio was after Jennifer. But, you know, I don't think it's something that we just totally blow off, but it seems a little bit of a stretch to me, at least on first inspection.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have to maybe consider it just because
if
you think about a girl that goes missing in the same kind of general area, I mean, just because of that coincidence, if we want to call it coincidence, I think it still has to be considered. And I don't know if you saw, but I saw where at least people online are saying that she went to, or Jennifer went to the same bar, I guess, that Tracy went missing from or was seen with him, or I can't remember exactly what they said, but I don't know. So, I mean, I guess if they were in the same location, that would maybe add some possible links or credibility to it. So I think that unlike the other ones that we mentioned earlier, I think this one we might have to actually at least attempt to see if we can find out if there's more to it, I guess.
You know, hopefully we can find some connections that, or some people that can confirm or deny, yes, Jennifer used to hang out at the tap room, or no, you know, we never knew that she hung out there, or something like that. So we'll have to try to piece that together. I think that's going to be a key because, like you said, if that's the case and we find out, or some of her friends or her family or somebody says, or the bartender's there or whatever, she hung out here all the time, and so did James Hathaway, and so did Tracy Ocasio, and all that kind of stuff. Now we're inching a little bit closer towards something that makes sense.
And it didn't seem to just be, you know, random internet people too. Like, I saw news articles where they had mentioned Jennifer's family, like, possibly considering the link between the two. And I mean, so many years ago now, I don't remember right now what year it was. I know it was after Jennifer, but it was definitely a lot of years ago. And we don't really, or at least I haven't seen anything recently still talking about him in relationship to Jennifer Kessie. So I think we have to assume that nothing came of it from the investigation with the police or whatever, but it was awful strange to see in real news sources, like the newspaper, you know, Jennifer's family commenting on the possibilities, or the, I guess not the possibilities, but the similarities between the two, or the possible coincidences between them. So I don't know. I think we have to add it to the list of things that have happened in the past that we have to take a look at again if we're really going to do what we said about, you know, not leaving anything unturned or whatever.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff I read was dated 2011. That was when a lot of the conversations were taking place from people. It was on, you know, on some online message boards, also some articles in the newspaper. So, again, I didn't see a lot of stuff that mentions Jennifer Kessie recently. I would agree with that. I haven't seen anything either. A lot of the ties just keep saying Tracy Ocasio and James Hathaway. They sort of don't delve into the whole Jennifer Kessie thing.
I was trying to look at it. And I don't know. I wasn't really seeing it. Did you look at that?
Yeah.
Look at him?
Yeah. I wasn't seeing it either. Now the picture I saw of him, I think, was more of a booking photo of some sort. I can't remember exactly what the photo was, but At first glance, no. I didn't scream to me, oh my gosh, that looks just like he could be the POI. Not saying he's not, but. You know, I don't get that impression.
I did see where he had talked about making people disappear, stuff like that. So I don't know. I mean, that part of it is kind of weird, but I guess just because he, you know, probably had something to do with another girl going missing and talks about making people disappear doesn't mean he's responsible for every missing person case. But I don't know. I guess what we have to say is at this point that we can't just not look into it, even though I feel like talking to you right now, like you're suspicious of it, like being linked to Jennifer, just kind of like I am. But that said, I guess we're going to have to spend some time looking at it, or at least considering it until we get more info.
Yeah, I mean, I'm naturally suspicious of a lot of stuff like this, especially stuff that you see online and people are making these connections that, you know, seems like they're more
kind of a TV script or something like that. But I mean, I did read some stuff. Again, I want to look further into this, but that he was used to work for some sort of a business that did lake dredging and that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's all those little things, what that has to do that I don't know. People, you know, have made assumptions about, you know, that she could be in a body of water or something like that. So it's these little things I think that people take and they pick and then they start to think that it makes sense to them. And maybe it will eventually, but for me right now, I feel like it's just a bunch of individual things and I'm not really tying it together to place him in the disappearance of Jennifer.
We're now several months into this investigation, and our opinions and thoughts on this particular individual, they haven't really changed. And so we're left with a man who's clearly capable of extreme violence, especially against women. There's a track record there. We have a man who frequented locations that Jennifer may have as well. But for us, that's where it ends. There just isn't anything else that we've been able to find. After all of those hours, to tie the disappearance of Jennifer Kesey to James Hathaway. And we also have to remember that the police have actively investigated this individual and his possible connections to Jennifer as well. And to our knowledge, none have ever been made. They have access to her financial records, her phone records, and all of the other evidence that we don't. And they still are unable to tie him to her disappearance. I mean, if we really think about it, what scenario would even work? Jennifer, after talking to her boyfriend on the phone that night, showered, got dressed, and drove to the tap room, and she ended up interacting with James Hathaway, and it ended badly. It's obviously just a lot of conjecture at this point. And any kind of connections that we would attempt to make would be pure speculation. So while we certainly can't eliminate Hathaway in regards to Jennifer's disappearance, at this time, with no evidence indicating any involvement other than the coincidences, it can't be a focal point of the investigation. But we know that we aren't the only ones that have looked into this. Those of you that have emailed us and contacted us and suggested that we take a look, we still feel that it was worthwhile, because at this time, considering all of the possibilities is the only way forward. So thank you for those messages and those emails. And if you have more information that we're unaware of, please let us know. We also want to take a moment to update you on the information that was mentioned in episode 9, where we discussed the prior search locations and spoke with a woman who believes she saw Jennifer's car the night before she was reported missing in a patch of woods off of Oak Ridge Road. First, we've heard from a few people about additional search locations that may not have been reported on and we did not mention in episode 9. So of course, stay tuned for updates if we make progress on those. Also in the last sidebar, we hadn't had a chance to catch up with the Oak Ridge witness. But over the last week, that's changed. We did have a chance to touch base. And first and foremost, she talked about how she wished she could remember more. It's just that it's been so long that the details just aren't as vivid anymore. She wishes that someone would have asked her these questions back when she first called in her tip. She knows she would have been able to share more detail. I asked her if there was any way that she could nail down the time of what she witnessed, and she said again, only that she knew it was dark. But she did add that her kids were asleep, so what would have had to been later in the night? She could say for a fact that it would have been after 8 p.m., the time that her kids went to bed, but that 10 p.m. or 11 p.m., those would have been possible too. I also asked about the church specifically. The church that sits on the front property facing Oak Ridge Road, which owns the wooded area which she described. I asked about activity that she would see there, cars, people, anything. She says that she knows the church was active at the time, and she may have seen an occasional car parked in the area, but not frequently. And the fact that those two cars were in the woods behind her house late that night, that stood out. Also, in regards to the church, we've been attempting to contact them to inquire about any past searches or consider the possibility of one now. But it's been extremely difficult. As this is a real-time investigation, and we are working on these things week to week in between the episodes that you hear, this is just one of those times where getting that information in that short period of time has been impossible. It's been incredibly frustrating to spend 2 weeks just churning our reels. Here's what we do know. We know that the church is apparently no longer active. And those individuals who were previously associated with it have seemingly disappeared, changed their contact information, or just aren't responding. If you're listening and you have connections to the church, you know someone who was a member there, or any other possible leads that could help us make contact, we need your help. We've hit a bit of a wall. Send us an email, call the voicemail, or message us on Facebook. Also, we know that some of you have stopped by to take photos and videos of the Oak Ridge Church wooded area. And while we appreciate your efforts, we don't encourage anyone to trespass on private property without going through the proper channels. And we want everyone to be safe. If you think you may know something about the disappearance of Jennifer Kesey, the time to come forward is now. Call the Orlando Police Department and ask to speak to the detective in charge of this case. And don't give up until you do. It's time to bring Jennifer home. We'll be back next week with our follow-up sidebar episode. Remember to call into the voicemail line. You can find that number in the show notes or on our website. Send an email or send us a message on social media. I said it earlier, but I can never say it enough. Thank you for listening, participating, and being part of this. Don't forget to like the podcast page on Facebook, join the discussion group by searching Unconcluded Podcast Discussion, or follow the show at Unconcluded Pod on Twitter or Instagram. Unconcluded is produced by Scott Jameson and myself. All music in this episode by PC3. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.